will miss their annunciations, the good news they bring us. I get that. What is harder to get hold of is the idea that the stranger who is myself might also bring a gift if I welcome him home. How am I to understand that and act upon it? The clue lies in six words from those lines from Derek Walcott I have already quoted, "Give back your heart to itself." Those of us who have spent much of our lives wanting or pretending to be someone else have been disloyal to the self we were. Yet another example of the craving the Buddha told us was the source of all human misery, even if it was only the desire to be a different person, someone better looking, or cleverer, or holier, or purer, or braver, anyone other than the self we were. That was always impossible, the poet tells us. So before it is too late, give back your heart to yourself. Say yes to the stranger you were. He's been in the wings all your life, waiting for his cue, waiting to be invited on stage. He doesn't mind that you've left it till the curtain is about to fall. He understands that it was in the cards like everything else. But there's one last card to play, and he wants you to play it bravely, as yourself, just the way the Duke did. It was in his dying that John Wayne finally became John Wayne. At the end he was brave, not just up there on illusion's bright screen, but in a real hospital on a high bed with the flowers and the drugs and the forced smiles. "Let's go," he said. And this time, it wasn't a line from a movie. It was an act of personal bravery. Courage can be death's last gift to us if we'll grasp it. Another sad romancer who came to himself at the end was my old friend St. Peter. We have already watched him auditioning for the role of hero in the Gospels, knowing in his heart he was a fraud. As they say in Texas, Peter was all hat and no cattle. And that seems to have been his story right up to the end. There's no obituary of Peter in the Gospels, no official account of his death. The history books are silent as well. But there is a legend I like, because fiction or not, there's something authentic about its take on the old betrayer. According to the story, Peter was an old man in Rome when the Emperor Nero started to persecute Christians as a cover for his own guilt for the fire that was destroying the city. Again, Peter's courage failed him. The legend describes him making his escape from persecution in Rome, trudging along the Via Appia, on the run again. Was he thinking about his three denials that night 30 years before? Did he hear the cock crow as he reached the edge of the city? And did the Lord turn and look at him? This time it was different. This time Jesus walks towards him. "Quo vadis, Domine?" asked Peter. "Where are you going, Lord?" "Eo Romam iterum crucifigi," replied Jesus. "I am going to Rome to be crucified again." Again Peter bursts into tears, but this time he turns round and goes back to Rome and his own crucifixion. The legend says that when the moment came, he asked to be crucified upside down because of his lifetime of desertions. That has an authentic, over-the-top Petrine touch to it, a bit of characteristic swagger. Time to face the truth, he thinks to himself. This time he did. And it didn't matter that it had taken him his whole life to get there. A life takes as long as it takes to bring us to our truth, even if we only make it on our deathbed. I have said it before, I shall say it again. We didn't get to deal our hand in life. We only got to play the cards we were given. and how we play the last card can win the game. A death well faced can be redemptive of a life that may not have been well lived. There's something of this idea in the Christian and Islamic tradition of the martyr whose voluntary death can purge the sins of a lifetime. A moment of courage at the end can wipe out a lifetime of failure and excess. There is a lot of darkness in the history of the doctrine and both those religions, of course, and it still plays out grimly in today's headlines. But the truth remains that a brave and reconciled death can perfect an imperfect life. It places a full stop on the script. Another story is completed. That's why I read obituaries religiously now, waiting for the period to be stamped onto the last sentence of the last paragraph, praying that I'll do my own dying well when my last page is turned. But what has surprised me most about obituaries is that reading them as a regular discipline helps to reconcile me to my own death. They work like those meetings of substance abusers who help each other overcome their addictions by owning and sharing them. Reading obituaries encourages me to confess my own condition. I take my place in the wide circle in the waiting room and say to the others assembled there, "Good evening, my name is Richard, and I suffer from a terminal disease called mortality. Like all of you in here tonight, I am waiting for the last bus." It's strangely comforting. As the days of my years blow away like pages from a calendar in an old black-and-white movie, I know it's maybe not far away, the date of my death. But the thickening fall of all those obituaries reminds me I'll be among friends. Anxiety fades as I recognize that my name has also been enrolled in the great democracy of the dead. Sooner or later, the bus will be along for me. But I've been a walker all my life, so when I hear its approach afar off, I hope I'll have time to lace on my boots and set out to meet it. I'll try to take it easy this time. I think I'll take a road I used to know that goes by Slieve na Gearrach and the sea, and all day breasting me the wind will blow, and I'll hear nothing but the peewit's cry and the sea talking in the caves below. I think it will be winter when I die, for no one from the north could die in spring, and all the heather will be dead and grey, and the bog cotton will have blown away, and there will be no yellow on the whin. But I shall smell the peat, and when it's almost dark I'll set my feet where a white track goes glimmering to the hills, and see far up a light. Acknowledgements. This book began its life as a series of broadcast essays delivered on BBC Radio 4 in the slot that follows the 1 o'clock news. The suggestion for the series came from James Murray, whose company Butterfly Wings Productions Limited produced it for the BBC in January 2016 under the title 3 Score Years and 10. Encouraged by my agent Carolyn Dawney and my then editor at Canongate, Jenny Lord, I used the broadcasts as the impetus for writing this book, and I am grateful to them for their pressure and encouragement. I'm also extremely grateful to my new editor at Canongate, Simon Thurgood, for all the care and attention he brought to the editing of the text as it emerged. I am extremely grateful to Marion Goldsmith and Rena Mackay for allowing me to use excerpts from the addresses I gave at the funerals of their husbands, both of whom I remember with deep affection. I'm also grateful to the Niven family for allowing me to use the address I gave at the wedding of Amy and Graham. I owe my wife Jeannie more than I can find words for, but I am particularly grateful to her for her advice on bereavement counseling, a subject on which she is a practiced expert. I read a lot of poetry, so every poem quoted in this book I have discovered myself, except one, Goodbye to the Villa Parana by Frances Hope. I found it in Alan Bennett's Keeping On, Keeping On, and knew immediately it would be important to me. I'm grateful to Alan Bennett for the discovery. My dog Daisy died as this book was going through the final stages of the copy editing process. She was 17 years old, and for every minute of those years, she was happiest when she was beside me. We walked thousands of miles together on the Pentland Hills till she was too old and tired to keep up. The first trek I took without her was on Good Friday 4 years ago. It seemed the right day for it, and I wept as I strode through the green kloof without her wee body trotting behind me, close at my heels. Her final years were of peaceful decline, slower walks round the block, having to be carried upstairs, more visits to the vet, sleeping most of the time, though dogs have always been great at that anyway. We held her close as the kindly vet released her from what had become a painful disintegration. Given how old I am, she will not be replaced. Daisy was my last dog, and the years blow away like leaves in the wind. The present life of men on earth, O King, seems to me to be like this, as if when you are sitting at dinner with your chiefs and ministers in winter time, one of the sparrows from outside flew very quickly through the hall, as if it came in one door and soon went out through the other. In that actual time it is indoors, it is not touched by the winter storm, but yet the tiny period of calm is over in a moment, and having come out of the winter, it soon returns to the winter and slips out of your sight. Man's life appears to be more or less like this, and of what may follow it or what preceded it, we are absolutely ignorant. The Venerable Bede. This is Richard Holloway. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Waiting for the Last Bus, Reflections on Life and Death. This program was produced and directed by Alistair George at Canongate Studios. Text copyright 2018 by Richard Holloway. Production copyright 2018, Canongate Books Limited. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.